Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to Plugged Into Long Island on 102.3 WBAB and 106.1 BLI. This morning, we're here to talk about the Michael Senna Memorial Fund. And with us, we have Michael's mother, Barbara. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Michael's sister, Nikki. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning.
And brother, Tom.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. All right, tell us about the reason you're here today. What is the story behind the Michael Senna Memorial Fund?
So the Michael Senna Memorial Fund was created because we're a family deeply impacted by drug addiction. And what we want to do is we want to raise awareness on the issue through local community events, through community resources, bringing together the local community and letting people know that are in active recovery, people that are in active addiction, that there are supports out there and organizations out there that, you know, are there for them. So the reason that we're here today, our first event, the Michael Senna Run for Hope, it's a 5K run walk.
And that happened in October, correct?
Yeah, that happened just a few weeks ago.
Okay.
On October 22nd. And yeah, it was a, you know, successful event. We had over 350 participants and we raised, you know, over $25,000. To focus on the issue that is becoming such a problem here locally on Long Island.
Okay. And the story is that Michael passed. Tell me about what happened to initially kick this whole thing off.
So, going to backtrack a little.
Sure.
On November 8th, 2016, slightly before 6 o'clock in the morning, I got a knock at the door. Intuitively, as mom, knowing something was wrong, I hesitantly opened the door, and there was a police officer, Suffolk County police officer, standing there, and he goes, "Barbara Senna." I'm like, "Yes." And he goes, "I'm sorry to inform you that your son Michael is dead." And I don't know, "What?" And he goes, "Well," I go, "How? What? And then he was like, "Bad batch, we think, overdose." And I'm like, "Oh my God, how?" And I don't really remember much after that. But anyway, spiraling back, Michael graduated 2008 from Deer Park High School as a most school-spirited, most athletic. He was an athlete. He was a track star and a football star. And then he went to college, and then when he was around 20 years old, he unfortunately got a DUI, but his friend's father had Oxycontin in the cabinet, and they all tried it. And needless to say, my son got addicted to it, unbeknownst to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And Oxycontin is a very addictive drug, and they overprescribed it, and, you know, people, you know, checking it out in the cabinets. And my son, I didn't even know, you know, a little while after that, a cop did knock on my door also saying, "I think your son's selling your jewelry." And I'm like, "My son?" And then they're like, "Yeah." He goes, "You know, I think he's an addict." And he was just 20 years old and was underage. That's why he told us. Things spiraled out of control after that, and we got him into a facility. And after that, he ended up, you know, I think get into the story a little bit more later, but it turned into heroin after that because, you know, it's a cheaper, quicker drug. One of his friends said to me, you know, a bunch of them got into it, "Barbara, we didn't know the next day that we were going to wake up in physical pain without the stuff." And it's like it rewires their brain. And unfortunately, Michael had his ups and downs. He had some, you know, a lot of clean time in between there. And he was clean for a year this past time, and he ended up dying a little over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a little hard to talk about it, but there's more of, you know, of a story in between there. And I know we all want to discuss, you know.
Yeah, and this is really courageous of you guys to be here, because obviously, you know, it's hard to talk about, but I'm sure you're feeling a sense of urgency that you want to spread awareness to others who would be in the same boat you are. And, you know, a lot of that is absolutely non-suspecting that there is any issue, let alone something to indicate there might be a problem. But the way you describe this as spiraling out of control, you know, that's pretty scary. So, you know, I think, you know, we need to stop this at a much earlier point in time, and it's not going to happen without awareness. So you guys are doing that. You have your events. You had your 5K. What's in the near future as far as what you plan next? Like, how are you moving forward with this stuff?
Sure. So, a lot of time and effort kind of went in, and it really took a village of people to make this 5K, this first 5K event successful. You know, we had no idea how to, you know, start one of these things or, you know, what to do. But, you know, luckily a lot of, you know, we had a lot of volunteers. We had a lot of people in the community that have, you know, run successful 5Ks before, you know, have been there to help guide us along.
Sure.
We decided to make it a 5K first and foremost, because that was something that Michael, you know, was really inclined towards. When he was, you know, in recovery and when he was sober, he was a, you know, kind of this shining light and shining example to others in active addiction. And one of the things that he, you know, used physically was running 5Ks, was running marathons. That was something that kept him motivated. It was a, you know, a constant goal that he could, you know, it was something tangible that he can go, he could do, he could focus on and achieve. And he was really good at it. He was a great runner.
He did the Long Island Marathon in under 4 hours.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was something that, you know, he even said, you know, before he passed, and he was always focused on helping other people through their journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was always focused, and he was saying, you know, I would love to, you know, help other people by doing a 5K, right? And honestly, like after he passed, it was, you know, it was a hard and it was a trying time for all of us. But through that, like, I think we all found solace in knowing that we were going to do something, right? We knew that we needed to get out in the community, and the 5K was just like everybody, we all thought about it, we knew it, and we said, you know, we're going to do one of these things. Have no idea where we're going to start, but we're going to do it. And yeah, so that first event, it was great, and I think it exceeded kind of all of our expectations. And in the near future, you know, we're going to, you know, really kind of start this grassroots movement, I think, to focus on a lot of other community events that we can do in the community to get people kind of together.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you guys recently got started. So, you know, the plans are probably still in the making and you're reeling from this first event. So,
yeah, sure.
But as you see the success of it, it must inspire you to continue going on with it and think about the next one as
Absolutely.
You go along. So,
I think one of the most awesome things is that the people that are outpouring are a lot of the people in recovery. Mm-hmm. And they are, you know, I come up and I've been going to a lot of events for people in recovery. You know, my mom's been with me on a few of them, my girlfriends and my daughter and we go there and people just recognize us now and they hug us and like, thank you for being out there and thank you for letting other people know. Thank you for taking the stigma away. Thank you, you know, for letting know that this is a real problem and a mm-hmm. real disease.
Yeah.
So this isn't it. I mean, this is just the first of many things that we're going to do. But, you know, we're not stopping here. This is just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So statistics on overdoses, addiction on Long Island, we hear about it all the time. What do you have as far as, you know, percentages? And
so it was crazy even just looking up on the internet. So according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, nationally, in 2016, there was an estimated total in over 64,000 deaths due to opioid addiction, mm-hmm. An opioid overdose. And 20,000 of those were related to fentanyl. And fentanyl is a narcotic which is used to treat severe pain. And fentanyl is 50 times stronger than heroin alone. And it can be in the form of a pill, powder. And you don't know that a lot of this stuff is getting laced with fentanyl. It's in everything. It's in heroin, crack, cocaine, and it's so sad because it's an instant drug killer. So on Long Island, there's a total of 493 people who died from an opioid overdose in 2016 alone.
Hmm.
303 of those people were from Suffolk County, and 171 of those were related to fentanyl. So since 2000, more than 300,000 people have died from an opioid overdose, and it's such a growing epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
64,000 people a year. I mean, that number's outrageous. That's 128 people a day dying from this disease. This warrants a lot of attention, and that's more people than those dying in recent war. It's such a shame because this is something that you don't hear about, and it's an epidemic that's taking over this country. So we are fighting this war.
It's a trend that's going up rather than going down. And why do you suppose that is? I mean, is it the availability of these drugs, or?
I think it's just very convenient. You know, you hear heroin is a cheaper form of any other drug on the market. So I guess because it is conveniently available, whether it's at a gas station or someone knows someone. And
yeah,
I honestly do believe it's from this is my own opinion,
sure,
but you know, that it started with most of the people that I've learned from is the OxyContin, right?
Yeah,
OxyContin. Mm-hmm. So you know, they're overprescribed and they try it, they get addicted to it, and then they're looking for the same feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, and they turn to heroin because it's a much cheaper way to go. But now the heroin's not even heroin anymore. It's heroin laced with fentanyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's getting laced.
Are we looking at a particular age group, too, that it seems to affect more than I am? Is it adolescents? Is it adults? Is it mixed?
You know, the funny thing is we're in a bereavement group, GRASP, which is, you know, for families that are affected by people that have passed from addiction. The majority of the people that are passing are between in the 20 to 40 range.
Mm-hmm.
So a heavy majority of a young generation that's being sold, the majority are probably between 20 and 30, but wow, there's some up to 40. It's horrible.
Because I think teens, sometimes when I think about, you know, drug overdose, and I think, oh, you know, there are weak moments, and sometimes when you're less mature, you're not able to balance out mm-hmm. your ideas about what to do, and so you just irrationally go to, but it's not the case. This is just mm-hmm. running rampant in a lot of different demographics. So really bad, really dangerous stuff. So what do you think is wrong with the system?
That's me. So with Michael's story, we had a lot of issues. So like I said, when the first, you know, we finally realized things spiraled out of control, he went into a 28-day facility. So the first problem was, is, you know, I went to one of those family meetings saying, and this woman grabbed my arm, she goes, just want to let you know, 28 days is not enough. She was right. My son got out. We thought he was okay. He went back to being his lifeguard, Mr. Jock, you know. He was a beautiful person, you know, and funny guy, and everybody did love him. But real life, I don't know. I think he was so attracted to, you know, the use of it and thinking, oh, I could just use a little bit. Needless to say, but less than 3 months later, he was back on the stuff again. And except now insurance didn't cover, right? Mm. So I had to pay out of pocket to get him away.
Yeah.
And, you know, God bless my mother because she had to lend me the money because I just didn't have it. So he went away and he came back. But he went to an outpatient facility that I had to pay out of pocket. So, you know, and then, like, oh, put him on Medicaid. I put him on Medicaid. He went away to a facility, finally on Medicaid, and it was not a good facility. He went there for, you know, quite a substantial amount of time, but he learned a lot of bad things there. So they weren't monitoring it closely enough.
Some of these facilities are like kind of drug school, right?
Right.
So, I mean, some of these sober houses, you sit and you learn things that other people did in their past.
It's having the opposite effect.
Right. It's having the opposite effect where he's learning more rather mm-hmm. than, you know, kind of focusing on his recovery. Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, like he came back and we thought, you know, he was okay. And so he ended up, you know, we found that he was on heroin. He went to a great facility upstate. And I thought it was wonderful. And so he was really clean for a long time, but then he had to transition back to real life. And that's, I think, the problem, that once you start the addict, you know, and it's part of its genetic, you know, if you have addiction in your family or alcoholism or anything like that, any type of addiction, 75% chance that, you know, your kid could have it.
Yeah, you're predisposed.
You're predisposed mm-hmm. to it. So, you know, maybe there's more testing, and I know there's some new thing that can test to see if you have that gene in your body. My son, you know, he went to a great facility. He was clean for a long time. And then he had 18 months, actually, that was his longest time. He started real life again. So the real life transition and the bills and the worries and everything else, I guess he thought he could do a little bit. But my son didn't do good in detox. When you went into detox, you go in, and if you don't do good, you just walk right out the door. So he couldn't handle that. So we detoxed him at home. So when we detoxed him at home 72 hours straight, me and his girlfriend literally blocking the door, as soon as we said, okay, you tested clean, we went to a facility They're like, oh, we can't take you. You're clean. And he's like, don't worry. I have this. He went to a sober house. 6 weeks later, my son overdosed, you know, one of the first times, and he was brought back to life by Narcan, and the sober house said, oh, well, we can't have him anymore. And the hospital said, well, we don't want him. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with him? So they sent him home. So, you know, there's like little lots of things that are broken. With, he's had everything. So we came back home for a month, and I got him into a facility far away, and then they put him on Vivitrol, which is an opiate inhibitor, which, you know, was like your Suboxone, but nobody was monitoring, even though he went to, you know, trying to go to, you know, meetings. And after that, he switched to crack. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then crack is evil. And he spiraled out of control pretty quickly. And but we got a facility down in Florida. And that was a little rough time. And he goes, Mom, I want to live. I want to live. I love life. I want to be me again. And he goes, it's such a struggle every day. And, you know, I did the enabling and the hard love and the tough love. And, you know, as a parent, you want to do everything as you can for your child.
Right.
And, I mean, it's heartbreaking to see this beautiful young soul being stolen from me. So he was great.
There's a lot of, you know,
broken
issues, you know, talking about, you know, from the rehab facilities not, you know, being long enough to what insurance will actually cover,
yeah,
to supports after the facility, so outpatient supports,
right,
monitoring, even, you know, in some of these, you know, I live down in Florida now, but in some of the sober houses that are down there, there's, you know, drug dealers that are living right across the street that are, you know, there's this, you know, kind of wacky commission where if you, you know, test positive, you can like enter a rehab and you get a commission for it. Right. So there's this like convoluted, you know, system where they're getting kickbacks and payments and
it's
things
backwards.
Like that. Right.
Yeah.
It's totally backwards. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, although that there are a lot of great organizations that are out there, you know, there's a handful of, you know, not so great ones, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, a lot of it's going to be, you know, getting the right resources out there and people understanding what the great facilities are. And, you know, the right steps to, you know.
And maybe a redesigning of these facilities,
yes,
as far as how they're going to follow through from,
right,
the initial first step to what's next.
Right.
How to monitor the situation, how to continue to keep the situation under control. Mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely.
100%.
What are some other local community resources out there that have similar missions?
So, you know, going out there and starting to pound the pavement of, you know, when we're promoting the run and I'm trying to meet people. And we had a bunch of resource tables at our mission. I met this wonderful man talking about the heroin epidemic called Anthony Risotto. He is part of Seafield and FIST. He created was Families in Supportive Treatment. Mm-hmm. And they actually help people to find the right resources to help them get the help that they need, you know, when they're in active addiction. Because I literally call people when, you know, Michael, and go, please help me. I don't know what to do. So he's like one of the wonderful resources that they have. Thrive is something for it when people want to be sober, which is another organization that was put together for, you know, having a regular sober community. You know, I met so many young people that were like, come on, we're having a sober party at our house, or we're going bowling together. Why don't we go hiking? We're celebrating, you know, Sammy's 1 month clean, you know, and it's a sober party. So I thought some of those organizations are great. I'm part of the Town of Babylon partnership, and, you know, they have the Beacon Wellness Family, they have Hope for Youth, they have the Outreach House is something that's under 18. It's a long-term facility. I met a young a gentleman from Hope House out east. There's a waiting list for these people to get in that's, you know, a longer-term facility. So there are a lot of resources out there. Actually, MichaelSenaMemorialFund.org, we have a lot of the resources listed that people can even go to and check it out that we support and, you know, want to help sponsor.
What was that website again?
MichaelSenaMemorialFund.org.
MichaelSenaMemorialFund.org. Okay, good to know. Do you have recovery stories that can spread hope for people listening right now?
We do.
Oh, that's me. Oh, sorry. No, sorry. So, basically, you know, going through this recovery network, I have met some wonderful young people. One of the young people I met was this guy, Joey. And Joey was with Anthony at one of the speaking events, and you know that's how we found out. Actually, he was with Michael when he had OD'd in Riverhead and brought him back to life. Joey just celebrated 3.5 years clean. He just got married. He went back to school for to be an accountant, mm-hmm. you know, which I'm an accountant also. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he said that it's like you have to stick to the program. You have to know it, own it, and want it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another young man that Michael actually helped down in Florida is Sean. Sean was a wonderful young man, and he was a little bit shy. Michael's very outgoing. And he said, you know, without Michael, I wouldn't have been able, to get through it. But he's now, he just celebrated 2 years clean, you know. Him and Michael, shared the same room in the sober house for months. Mm-hmm. And he's now becoming a lawyer, you know. So it's not, it affects all different people, and everybody has their own story. Anthony himself, he's 24 years clean. You could do it. You have to, obviously want it, but you have to be able to connect to, mind, body, and soul.
Right.
So you.
And your support group is.
And
huge.
Your support group huge, is huge, very, huge. Very important.
Absolutely. Yep. Finding the right people. What can Long Island do to help?
So I think, supporting a lot of the local events like this, understanding that there are a lot of community organizations that are out there. I think, in general, I think people, understanding the stigma that's associated with addiction, I think in general, people kind of look at addiction and kind of say like, it's your fault, you started it, right? But in reality, I think by and large, most of the people that, are addicts aren't going into it with the intention of, becoming an addict, right? They go into it not really knowing a whole lot, not being educated about, the drugs or, whatever they're doing. And they don't know. And they, down the line, they just kind of end up getting hooked. And I think there's a kind of a stigma associated with that. I think if Long Islanders just kind of look at this and say like, what can I do to help? What can I do to, support and the awareness of this? What can I do to educate my family? Because I think a lot of people, even in their own families, don't think like, hey, this will never happen to me, right? This is definitely something that doesn't discriminate across race, class, religion, anything like that. So I think in general, just going out, supporting a lot of the local organizations that are focused on doing things to help and just kind of thinking about it just a little differently, I think would be a huge start.
That's a first step. Okay, good. So what are solutions to these problems? What are the good outcomes overall, in your opinion?
I think one of the big things is that we have to have a united front, and as I'm going to these groups, and that's what they're thanking me, the solutions is as a united front, I think that we can, not us personally, under the fun, but, maybe help legislation change how they prescribe the drugs, and make the awareness of what's going on out there and raising the awareness, starting with the young people. And that's really where we have to start, that saying that never pick up that pill. Don't go in your parents' medicine cabinet. Don't say, hey, let's try this. You can have a good time without doing drugs. And
There are new things you can try without that.
Right, and 100%. And I think the solution is if we all recognize that there's a problem, not put our head under in the sand, and that we work together, we can really help fight this epidemic and not let all these young people lose all this potential that, are being buried because, they're dying from the overdoses.
Right.
I think on, especially on like the smallest scale level, I think, us personally, we would sit there and say, if we could help just one other family, mm-hmm. just one other family kind of avoid what we went through, then that would be a successful outcome for us. We want to, share our experience with others so that they know what to look out for, so they know what, what warning signs might be, what resources are actually out there. With this event and, with events to come, I think it'll end up being a lot bigger than that. We're really excited about that.
I feel like what you have already accomplished, you've already surpassed that goal many times over. So, well, good luck with this. I mean, it's obviously a humongous problem that just needs to be raised to a higher level of consciousness, because it's just not something we think about all the time. And, maybe keeping an open dialogue with family members about just everything in general.
Yes.
I mean, that's not going to do, and that's not the only thing, but, you know, it's a start.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Guys, good luck. This is a great cause, and I wish you the best of success on your next 5K run. And you're always welcome back here for follow-up, because we'll have the time for you on these shows.
Thank you so. We appreciate
thank
it.
You so much.
And can you get that website one more time for people who've heard this and thought to themselves, I want to know more about what you guys offer?
Yes, it's www.michaelsennamemorialfund.org.
Tom, Nikki, Barbara, thanks for being our guests this morning.
Thank you so much.
Plugged into Long Island. You've been listening to it on 102.3 WBAB and 106.1 BLI.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.